Tired of buying a bunch of different shorts for working out, looking good, and just life in general? Try Bird Dogs. They feel like gym shorts, but look like khaki shorts. The ultra-breathable fabric keeps you cool, and the built-in liner is an added layer of support. To top it all off, Bird Dog shorts look so good, you can wear them anywhere. Go to birddogs.com/MLB and enter promo code baseball for a free baseball hat with your order. That's birddogs.com/MLB, promo code baseball for a free hat. You won't want to take your Bird Dogs off, we promise you.
When the whole family comes together to watch the game, nobody wants to miss a second of the action to run to the grocery store. With Instacart, you can get all your weekly groceries in as fast as an hour. Less time shopping means more game time. Let's go. Visit instacart.com to get free delivery on your first three orders. Offer valid for a limited time. $10 minimum per order. Additional terms apply.
Zach's taking on the most polarizing issues in sports. Which side of the line of scrimmage will he end up on?
Offside. Defense number 69.
It's Onsides, Offsides with Zach Gelb on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, Hickster, what do we got?
Z-Man, the Phoenix Suns have formed a super team as they have traded for Wizard star Bradley Beal over the weekend. At least the agreement was put in place.
I'm sorry.
Over the weekend.
You consider that a super team?
Yes. Three stars.
I don't. Does that have the same feeling of a super team like when the Boston Celtics had Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, Ray Allen, or when the Heat had LeBron James and Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh, or the Warriors with Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, and Steph Curry? I don't know. It doesn't resonate to me as a super team because Kevin Durant, even though he's still a great player, later on in his career has dealt with some injuries. Bradley Beal the last few years has been dealt with some injuries as well. And I think Bradley Beal's a very, very, very good player. And Devin Booker is a heck of a player. But that just doesn't pop to me as a team that I look at as a super team. So continue the question, but when I hear the word super team for them, I don't know. It just
was it about more the concept than the actual, like, yeah, are the Suns better than the Warriors? No. Or the Heat? No. Or even the Celtics from 15 years ago almost? No.
What I'm saying is I don't know if you have three great players on that team.
Salary-wise, they absolutely do. Three max guys in Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, and now Bradley Beal. They also add, obviously, in DeAndre Ayton as well to form the most expensive foursome in the league. Now, Vegas has taken notice. They have made Phoenix fourth in terms of the best odds to win the championship next year behind the Nuggets, Celtics, and Bucks. Onsides or offsides, the Suns are your favorite to win the NBA Finals next year.
I won't even look at the East. I'll just look at the West right now. Denver's still better. Nikola Jokic, you can't stop him. You could only hope to contain him. And I haven't seen a team be able to contain him consistently yet. Jamal Murray is now back and will only get better with more confidence. You then look at the rest of the roster with Michael Porter Jr. if he could stay healthy. Gordon did a great job for them in the postseason, especially the NBA Finals. I just don't see how you look at the Suns. And we saw last year, right, Durant and Booker play great. But they didn't have this great rest of the roster. Sure, you had Bradley Beal, who's a very, very, very good player. But how do you fill out the rest of the roster? And you're going to have so many salary cap constraints as there is. I don't think you have a deep enough team. You have some star power. But I don't think just because you have star power means necessarily that you'll definitely win a championship. It's about a team concept. And I see a lot of guys that do the same thing on that team. And also you have injury concerns with Durant and Bradley Beal. So, no. Offside, the Suns. When you ask me, are my favorite to win the NBA Finals next year, I will say no, offside.
Offside!
Draymond Green will test the free agent market this offseason after he opted out of his contract earlier today. Now, Green will reportedly still try to work at the Warriors to secure a long-term deal, but there are other teams interested, including the Lakers, Mavericks, and Suns. They are in the top five betting odds, at least according to DraftKings, that could land the former, or right now, at least, I guess, the current still Warrior. Onsides or offsides, Draymond Green should return to the Warriors.
Offside. I think he should leave. I think he should go elsewhere. And I'll even double down on this and say it more importantly, I don't think the Warriors should want him back. The guy was a phenomenal player for them. The guy did things that they needed to go win championships, and he will forever be remembered as a Golden State Warrior and an integral part of that dynasty that Golden State had. But if you want to win another championship with Steph Curry in his prime, you need a better roster. And I don't think it makes sense to give Draymond Green a long-term lucrative deal, because for him now, I don't think the juice is worth the squeeze anymore. I don't know if they have the heart to tell him, though. You know, that's why Bob Myers probably knew that down deep, that they needed to get rid of Draymond and maybe even Klay Thompson. I don't think he had the guts to do so, and that's why I do believe he walked away from the organization. But if you want to win a championship again with Steph Curry, I think it's in the best interest to get the best version of Jordan Poole, and whatever money that would have been allocated to Draymond Green, you use it in other places. I don't believe at this stage of his career that you pay Draymond because of what he did for his past and all the past accolades. You pay for the future, and I really do believe that the Warriors are better off in the future without Draymond Green.
Rory McIlroy came oh so close yesterday to capturing his first major victory in 9 years, but did fall one shot short to Wyndham Clark U.S. Open.
I was shocked by this. And I know it's golf and it's nearly impossible to predict who's going to win a tournament, but after the first two rounds going into Saturday, I saw Rory was at like plus 330, plus 335, and I put a few dollars down on it. I really did think Rory McIlroy, when you looked at the leaderboard and clearly Scheffler was right there and you thought he was going to be a force, and that's who I thought was going to win this tournament going in. But when you saw like guys like Wyndham Clark, or I know Ricky Fowler, who was wearing normal pants, was having a really good tournament, I just thought those guys were going to fall back. And a guy like Rory, who's been so close but yet so far since 2014, was going to find a way. And he lost that tournament by one stroke. And you look back at it, his putting was just horrific. But continue with the question.
Putting did cost him, and now you look back, it's been a lot of missed opportunities for Rory, who does have four majors but has not won one since 2014, the PGA Championship. Now, he's come close since then. 10 different times he has finished top five in a major since 2014. Obviously, though, has not finished number one since. Onsides or offsides? Rory McIlroy will win another major in the next 3 years, and we'll give you a bonus. We won't include the Open as part of the 3 years. So 3 years plus the Open Championship.
Gotcha. So pretty much starting from next year.
So 13 majors in the next 3 years, including this one in a few weeks. Will he win one in the next 3 years?
I think so. I thought at first you were going to say, will he ever win a major championship again? And this would have been the easiest onsides ever. Because you look at a guy like Phil Mickelson, who we know how great Phil is, where he just won a major championship a little while back. And it was like, oh, wow, no one could have ever seen that coming. So, you know, you look at what Tiger did, and Tiger, for it was a lot of different reasons why he wasn't able to contend in these majors or win another major championship. And then he won that Masters. And you look back at Phil, when Phil, his last major championship was 2013, and then he gets the PGA in 2021. So that happens where you have a long layoff. I think we all know how great of a golfer Rory is. I really thought it would have been fitting if he would have won the U.S. Open. He did not. But I'm going to bet that in the next 3 years, when you have 12 or 13 cracks at it, that he'll find a way, even with how crazy it is that he hasn't had a major championship since 2014, that'll get the job done. And he's still looking for that Masters, because then that would get him the career Grand Slam, having won the PGA Championship twice in 2012 and 2014, the U.S. Open back in 2011, and then the Open Championship back in 2014. So I got to think, and I will bet that Rory, who I used to not like and now I like, that Rory will win another major in the next 3 years on sides.
Damian Lillard's future is reportedly in the hands of the Portland Trail Blazers. According to Shams, if the Blazers trade the third overall pick for a player that can help the team win now, then Lillard will stay in Portland. But if the Blazers opt to draft for the future, the team could see their longtime star finally requesting a trade. Onsides or offsides, the Blazers should keep the number three pick and trade Damian Lillard.
Who's the player that you think, if you're Dame, who has given this organization the benefit of the doubt and has extreme loyalty to them, Who is that player that is really out there that's going to make you say, okay, now I want to stay? I saw that report from Kevin O'Connor that Portland reportedly prefers Zion Williamson over Brandon Ingram. Is really Zion Williamson, because that tells me that Dame wants Zion. Does he really move the needle? I know Embiid missed all that time and then turned out to be a great player. The last 4 years, when you see Zion Williamson on a court, he's awesome. But the problem is he's never on the court. So if you're Dame and you have 2 to 3 more really great prime years left, how can you trust that Zion Williamson is not only going to be able to be on the court, but then that your team is going to be on a championship level? And I know you got some other young pieces on that team. I'm just trying to find, like, if they got Bradley Beal with Damian Lillard, okay. You know, that's a nice move, but they didn't. Bradley Beal's now off to the Phoenix Suns. So I don't think there's a player out there that we keep, like, you're going to go gaga over Karl Anthony Towns if you get him? No. So you hear all these players that are thrown in these trade offers or that could be available, whether it's Cat or if you look at a Zion Williamson. None of those guys move the needle for me if I'm Dame, when the alternative is probably going to Miami. And you get to go play with Bam Adebayo and then also Jimmy Butler. And you've seen that group get the 2 championships with Jimmy Butler as the star. And you'd be that missing piece to go get them over the hump. So you asked me, the Trailblazers should keep the number 3 pick and trade Damian Lillard. On sides, I know that you don't want to trade Dame because he's the face of your franchise. And I get why there's some skepticism there, especially when he wants to stay there. But at this point, I think you need to be honest with yourself and realize, even if you went out there and got a Brandon Ingram or you got Zion Williamson or you got Karl Anthony Towns, you're not winning a championship with Dame. So get what you could get now. Don't just throw him away for nothing. Don't do what the Wizards did, but even more complicated because he's the only player in the league, Bradley Beal, with a no-trade clause. So don't trade him away for nothing. But I think it's best for both parties to finally say, all right, the end is near. We love you, Dame. Dame, we know you love us. But for you to go have a shot to win a championship, it needs to be elsewhere. I think you get the best of both worlds there. That's what I would do. So you said to me that the Blazers should keep the number 3 pick and trade Damian Lillard. Yeah, I would keep the number 3 pick and then trade Dame, and you try to build a new young core and hope that you can get them to stay in Portland. So on sides.
And finally, Packers Pro Bowl corner Jaire Alexander had some high praise for his new starting quarterback in Jordan Love. Take a listen in a recent media scrum.
QB1, man.
Come on, man.
Best
Come
QB
on.
In the league right
What's
here.
What's up, John Money?
Now tell him stop trying me, though. You know what I mean?
Appreciate that, John.
Best QB in the league.
That's
high
nice.
Praise for a guy who's made one start so far over his first 2 years.
Hey, Hickey, by the way, you're the best producer here at CBS Sports Radio. The best.
Clipping that for later. Thank you.
The best. No one I would rather want to have here at CBS
Take
Sports
that to Radio. Management. You hear that? That deserves a pay raise, I think. Thank you very much. Yeah. We'll see how far that goes. But high praise so far for a guy who will
Joe
now
Hickey.
Make his...
Joe Hickey, right over his head.
First start. Now, go back to when Aaron Rodgers made his first or was the first season as a full-time starter back in 2008. Aaron Rodgers went 6-10 on the season, threw 28 touchdowns to 13 interceptions. So
that
first
was a whole
year,
different era of football.
That was a lot less thrown, but 6-10, 28 touchdowns, 13 picks. Aaron Rodgers' first full year as a starter back in 08. Onsides or offsides? Jordan Love replicating those stats should be considered a success in 2023.
You know what I'm curious? You said that was 2008, Rodgers?
2008, first year as a full-time starter.
Now, Brady the year prior threw for 50 touchdowns. But I wonder, Aaron Rodgers throwing 28 touchdowns in 2008. Where do you think he was most passing touchdowns in the league? If you had to take a guess.
I would say 4th.
Did you know that?
No, total guess.
Yeah, it was 4th.
Wow, let's go.
Your guy, Peyton Manning, only had 27 that year.
08. I can't give you much about 08, but okay.
Probably why. Now, Brady was in the league. Well, he was in the league, but he got hurt.
Game 1, 20 ACL.
Yeah, Bernard Pollard. Who do you think was the 3 people in front of Rodgers?
Oh, this is.
I'll give you a hint. His son is joining us tomorrow. That's one of them.
Kurt Warner. Oh, that was when the Cardinals went to the Super Bowl.
He had 30. So
Big
he was
Ben?
Third. Nope.
All right, so Kurt
the other
Warner
two
was third.
One of those guys you can't stand. He scared you a lot. And the other,
Philip Rivers.
Yes, he was tied for the lead league with this other guy that we had. Not a dust up with him at the Super Bowl, but with his PR people because they weren't nice to us and they only gave us 2 minutes of this guy's time when they said they were going to give us a 10-minute interview.
Drew Brees.
Yeah.
What was the number?
34 okay. For both of them.
That's right. Yeah.
Now, I'm just wondering.
Drew Brees.
Last year.
Good times.
Where does 28 touchdown passes put you for last year in the NFL? Real quickly.
I would guess 14.
Wow. It would put you, there were six people in front. Mahomes, wow. 41, Allen, 35, Burrow, 35, Geno Smith, 30, Kirk Cousins, 29, Jared Goff, 29. Rodgers actually only had 26 touchdowns last year. Is Aaron Rodgers declining? 8552124 CBS.
Jets in trouble.
Jordan Love replicating these stats should be considered a success. I'm going to say offside.
Offside.
Because the stats are irrelevant to me. As Belichick would say, stats are for losers. I just want to have the feeling that he could be the franchise guy. 28 touchdowns, 13 interceptions may do that for you, but I don't want to limit it to just and pigeonhole myself just to stats and wins and losses. It's just a feeling, and I don't know how you put a statistic on those feelings. Like if you tell me 45 touchdowns and 6 interceptions, sure, on sides. But I don't know if 28 to 13 really elicits that response. I don't think it's bad. But I just got to see the way that you feel about 28 touchdowns and 13 interceptions compared to it just being a stat thrown out there. You really got to watch the games is what I'm going at. And that's what we do here on CBS Sports Radio, Hickey. We watch the games.
Not box score readers here, that's for sure. We have our eyeballs on the game.
You wanted me to read box scores right there. Shame on you. Even though I just said you were the best producer here at CBS Sports Radio. Best in the league. Best in the league. Hickey will clip that. I'm sure he'll play it on his overnight show coming up this week. Right?
I'm trying to think who said, I feel like someone else said, like.
About you?
No. Oh. In general, like best. Oh, maybe it's just Tyreek Hill. Best. Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, someone was very demonstrative recently.
Patrick Mahomes, who? Tua Tagovailoa, the greatest quarterback ever. Frank Isola joins us next.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Let's head out to the guest line right now. Welcome in Frank Isola. Does a great job, SiriusXM NBA Radio. You see him all the time around the horn and ESPN as well. Frank, how you been?
Zach, what's going on?
I'm doing fantastic. So you obviously been around the block for a long time. I'll just ask you, since 2000, we know the two most hyped prospects getting ready for the draft were LeBron James and Zion Williamson. The Victor Wembanyama hype is at, like, a different level, but does it exceed where the hype was for LeBron and Zion, in your opinion?
No, I don't think so. You know, LeBron, even though he didn't play college basketball, everyone knew about LeBron. The idea was that he was going to be a transformative player. And then Zion, you know, really, the freshman year that Zion had at Duke, even though they didn't win the national championship, didn't even go to the Final Four, all their games were on TV. In that, like, 3 or 4 month period there, Zion was as big as any athlete in the country. It didn't matter if they were in the NHL or the NBA, I'm sorry, the NFL or the NBA. He was, you know, I mean, he had Barack Obama was showing.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
At Cameron. He was, like, I felt like that was something from, like, years earlier when it was Patrick Ewing coming out of the draft or Shaquille O'Neal, and everyone knew they would be the number one pick. And they were going to be a big deal. So I don't think Victor Wembanyama. I still think with international players, I still don't think it resonates as much. But he's accomplished a lot. I mean, he's already played professional basketball, and he's going to be the number one pick on Thursday.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. Like, this time of the year, everyone pretends to be an expert. We've seen most of Zion Williamson play. LeBron James, he was on a ton of TVs even when he was in high school, and we know where the hype was for that. Everyone knew he was going to be the next great thing. For Wembanyama, everyone tells you he's going to be great. I know you can watch YouTube highlights and things like that, but most of us haven't seen him play.
Yeah, but he also is a guy, from everything that you hear, very much committed to being a great player. Like, this is something that he really wants. And, you know, the one thing about, if you look at basketball in France, they have had a lot of success. You know, obviously Tony Parker being a big name and Boris Diaw, you know, their national team is very good. Rudy Gobert, obviously, as well. Evan Fournier. So he's got, you know, he is around. He understands the NBA culture and the environment. I think when you look at him, clearly the issue is going to be he's never going to put on a ton of weight, but he's going to have to get strong. I saw one of the last games he played against Monaco. And you know, he's not afraid of contact by any stretch of the imagination. You just wonder if guys like that could stay durable. But I'll say this. You know, when Pau Gasol first came into the league, now Pau Gasol isn't as big, or I should say isn't as tall, as Wembanyama, but he was awfully thin as well. And, after it took him some time, but he bulked up a lot. And, you know, Pau Gasol, obviously, he's going to go down as one of the better big men over the last 50 years in the league. So I think Wembanyama has a chance to be, obviously, a superstar. But, again, to me, the big question is going to be health, because guys that size, we've seen it too many times where they seem to be somewhat injury-prone.
And we've seen the comments from Steph, LeBron, and Giannis about Victor Wembanyama that even puts more hype onto the situation. Year one with San Antonio, what can you kind of expect out of him in the league?
Well, you know, he is going to a perfect team because, A, they've gone through it before with guys like David Robinson and Tim Duncan. In the case of Tim Duncan, you know, from the U.S. Virgin Islands, you are getting a foreign-born player, even though he did play American college basketball at Wake Forest. So I think he's going to the right place. Plus Tony Parker having had success there. So Wembanyama is very familiar with San Antonio and Greg Popovich. And you know, the one thing about the Spurs, they have so much cap space, and the early word is that they're not looking to be in the lottery next season. They're looking to really make some moves. I think for them, a successful year would be at the very least getting into the play-in tournament. So I think they're going to add some veteran players and try to be a team that could potentially be a playoff team in year one with Victor Wembanyama. But I would think if he plays 60 games, because now, I mean, we set the bar so low for some of the players now, I think 60 games would be successful.
How much longer do you think Greg Popovich will end up coaching for, Frank Isola?
Yeah, well, remember, Zach, when, you know, for the longest time, everybody said, oh, he'll probably retire when Tim Duncan plays his final game. Well, it's been a while since Tim Duncan has played his final game, and Greg Popovich is still, you know, he enjoys it. Now, the one thing about Greg Popovich, unlike most of the coaches in the NBA, for example, now maybe it'll change this year, but I know like with the Vegas Summer League, Greg Popovich was never there. He's at his, I think he has a summer home in Maine or something like that. So I think if he has the job down to a science, he knows all the restaurants on the road where they serve the best wine, and I think he still loves the teaching aspect of it. And I would think a guy like Wembanyama is going to make him feel young again. I think for a lot of these guys, you know, you can get to a certain age, you don't want to, I think some of them feel like, well, if I walk away, what am I going to do next? And I think that probably has something to do with it as well.
Frank Isola here with us. What did you make of the Bradley Beal deal that's going to go down with him going to Phoenix?
Yeah, I mean, the Phoenix Suns, you know, they already had Kevin Durant and Devin Booker. Clearly, they're going for it. I thought it was very interesting. There were comments made by Chris Paul in the New York Times where he said, you know, he was surprised by the trade because he didn't really get a big time heads up on it. And he said, I guess Matt Ishbia and Isaiah Thomas, our old friend from the New York Knicks, he said, I guess Isaiah Thomas just wanted to go in a different direction. So there's Chris Paul basically telling you that Isaiah Thomas has got something to do with the Phoenix Suns. But for Bradley Beal, he fits in perfectly there as the third guy. He's not a number one guy. I don't even think he's a number two guy. Look at the Wizards' record over the last, you know, 5-6 years. And he's only played 150 games the last 3 years. And he's only played in 11 playoff games since 2017. But I think for Bradley Beal, it's a great way for him to rejuvenate his career. His contract is terrible. His agent did a good job, and he's got a great contract. But in terms of a team contract, it's not good. I think he's one of the top 10 highest-paid athletes in the world. And that includes, you know, the NFL and Formula One racing, golfers, and, you know, the top soccer players like Lionel Messi and Ronaldo. So he makes crazy money for a guy that really hasn't been in a lot of games in the last 6 years.
Yeah, earlier I was saying I don't love it, but I don't hate it. I just don't view them as a super team, but I see a lot of people now saying, okay, this is the super team in the NBA. Do you think they're a super team right now?
Nah, I'm not buying that. I mean, first of all, Kevin Durant, any team that has him, the expectations are going to be championship or bust. And when Kevin Durant joined Phoenix last year, I think it was the 8 or 9 regular season games that he played, and they didn't lose. Then they got to the playoffs, got knocked out in the second round. And the biggest issue with Kevin Durant is he has a hard time staying healthy. And he's had a lot of leg injuries the last 4 or 5 years, really going back to the the Achilles injury that he suffered in the NBA Finals in 2019, I don't necessarily think it's a super team, but they're going to be formidable. There's no question about it. You know, Devin Booker's yet to win a championship. You know, Bradley Beal has never been to a conference finals. Obviously, Kevin Durant is the one with the playoff resume. They're going to be tough. They, you know, they'll go in along with Denver as of right now, before we know whatever else is going to happen in the Western Conference. They'll go in as one of the favorites, but that doesn't guarantee anything.
I just wonder if they're going to fill out the rest of that roster, because it seems like DeAndre Ayton's going to be on his way out. And we know last year, right, KD and Booker showed up in most of those postseason games, and they didn't really have much else around them.
No, I think that's fair, but now, A, they're going to have Bradley Beal, and there's a lot of teams that have a lot of okay players on their team that don't have stars. So, you know, Frank Vogel and, you know, the front office there in Phoenix and the owner, Matt Ishbia, they're in a good position where they have three stars, and now they're just trying to fill out the rest of the roster. It's much easier to do it that way than to just have a team that doesn't have stars and try to find them, because that's what the NBA is all about, at least having one star, which is why what Jokic did was so impressive. Because even though Jamal Murray is a terrific player, Jamal Murray's never been an all-star. So Nikola Jokic won a championship without a teammate who had been an all-star before.
Frank Isola here with us. His great job, SiriusXM NBA Radio. You, of course, see him all the time as well on PTI with ESPN. By the end of the week, will Zion Williamson still be a member of the New Orleans Pelicans?
I think that's the $64,000 question. I know the story from Bill Simmons where he says he's got on good authority that he's going to be traded. You know, I would think if the Pelicans are ready to move on from Zion Williamson, it must be because they don't feel like he puts in enough work to keep himself in shape. Because we all know that he's injury prone, but maybe they look at it as he's not doing enough to work on his body and to, you know, be in a position where he's fit, he's ready to play. You know, they did get rid of Teresa Weatherspoon, who was kind of his workout coach with the team. So maybe that's somewhat telling as well. I would think for them, let's say, for example, they trade him to the Charlotte Hornets, who have the number two pick, and you can get another player. Maybe that's something that'll be a positive for the Hornets, because the guy's great. I mean, you know, when he played, the last time he played was at 29 points he was averaging. He shoots 60% from the field, but he's played 29 games the last 2 years. He's played 114 games his 4 years in the NBA. He just doesn't play enough.
Frank Isola, I used to always admire the loyalty that Damian Lillard's had for Portland. Now I just think it's insanity. You got a few prime years left. I would try to force my way to Miami. When it's all said and done and the season rolls around, do you think Dame will still be in Portland or will he be elsewhere?
I think he'll be on the move. I think there's a chance he'll be in Miami, maybe Brooklyn, or, you know, maybe there's another team out there that will try to get him. You know, the one thing with Damian Lillard, he doesn't have a no-trade clause, but he has such a good relationship not only with the organization, the city of Portland. I think they would try to do right by him to, you know, to a certain degree. They're not just going to give him away to a team that he wants to go to. They're going to want to get back something of value. And I think you're right about the loyalty. It does say a lot about Damian Lillard. But I always say, you know, Kevin Garnett was in a similar situation. He was incredibly loyal to the Minnesota Timberwolves, gave everything that he had, even when they weren't putting a good team around him. He needed to be convinced that going to Boston was the best thing for him. He kind of went kicking and screaming, but he absolutely loved his time in Boston. The fans there, you know, they still revere Kevin Garnett, who ended up going to Boston and really changed his career. You know, he had been an MVP before and was obviously recognized as a great player, but he won a championship in Boston, and now he's viewed a lot differently.
If you were running Golden State, I know Draymond, right, is opting out of the contract, the $27.5 million player option. Would you give him a contract extension if you were running the Warriors?
You know, I think when you get to these situations, you know, so, business is still part of it, but maybe they feel an obligation with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson on the team to try to run it back. You know, Draymond Green fits in perfectly with that team, and even though Klay Thompson, you know, seemed to slow down a little bit, and Draymond Green, I didn't think was great in the playoffs. You know, really what's hurt the Warriors is when they had a couple of those lean years, and they got the number two overall pick in the draft, and they got James Wiseman, yeah, and it didn't work out. It's very similar to when Detroit many years ago had the number two pick in the draft, and they could have drafted Dwayne Wade. They could have drafted Carmelo Anthony. They drafted Darko Milicic.
Yeah.
They won the championship that year. Darko didn't contribute. But that thing could have extended a lot longer if they had drafted Dwayne Wade or Carmelo Anthony. When you're drafting high and you miss, it is a major, major setback for you. And I think that's a major setback for the Golden State Warriors.
By the way, before we let you run, we know that you cover the Knicks for a long time. When you saw Carmelo Anthony be referred to as an all-time great Knick, and that elicited a lot of response from the Knick fan, I personally like Carmelo Anthony a lot. I think he'll get his number retired. I don't have a big problem with
whoa,
that.
Whoa,
you got a problem with that?
Easy with that. Well, first of all, I hate the whole idea of retiring numbers. I think it's the silliest tradition. It's an American sports tradition. I think it's absolutely absurd. You want to put like a ring of honor, put the guy's name up there, I got no problem. But, you know, if you're going to open up a Pandora's box if you retire Carmelo. And Carmelo was a brilliant player, and in terms of covering him, he was incredibly professional, a great guy. I loved covering Carmelo Anthony. He's cool. You know, he's a sweet guy. He's a nice guy. He's also really cool, the way that he carried himself. But come on now. I mean, he won one playoff series with the Knicks. I mean, we're lowering the bar a little bit here. You know, Charles Oakley went to a finals. John Starks went to a finals. I would think if Carmelo got in, I think you're talking Starks, Oakley, and probably you might. I mean, Bernard King would be a definite. And then you might, you know, Allen Houston might be up for debate as well. I'm just not big on it. I hate these kind of discussions because I'm not trying to say the guy wasn't a great, great player, but I think it's a silly tradition, and I just don't think he did enough in terms of team success to justify something like that.
Well, you know it, and I know it, my friend. Charles Oakley could go find a cure for cancer. The Knicks will never honor him again as long as Dolan's
on the
team.
That's fine. The real Knicks fans know what Charles meant to the organization. Yeah, I mean, the guy that gave – go ask his teammates what he meant. I think ultimately that's all he cares about.
100%. Sirius XM NBA Radio's very own Frank Isola. Frank, always appreciate the time.
All right, Zach. Take care.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
You can think of Riley Auto Parts for your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. Let's go to David in Buffalo next up on CBS Sports Radio. David, what's shaking?
Hey, Zach. How you doing today, man? Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for making it. David, what do you got?
Yeah, I want to jump in and talk about the U.S. Open. Unbelievable win for Wyndham Clark, a guy that, you know, for a lot of years has been super underrated in the world of golf. People thought, you know, he had one of the best swings on tour. It's great to see him break through, you know, a couple times this year. But I think the big storyline to me is the two guys who didn't win it. Scheffler, for sure, the way he's hitting the ball this year, he's had a historic season striking the ball. He can't putt at all. But how about Rory, man? I mean, Rory's been the face of the tour through this whole LIV thing. This guy, inside of 100 yards at that level, he stinks. I mean, let's be honest, man. I mean, his wedge play for a PGA Tour player of his caliber, how long he drives it off the tee, it's terrible, man. I mean, Rory hasn't won a major in almost a decade. I mean, it's hard to believe, and I just don't see him getting, you know, a major anytime soon until he gets better with the wedges and the putter.
And you look back at the other day, and thanks for the phone call, David. I know he had a few bogeys in the second and third round, but you go to the last round. If he just had one birdie on the back nine, Hickey, one birdie on the back nine, we get a playoff between Wyndham Clark and Rory McIlroy. I know that it's tough to look back at it that way, but I'm not getting greedy there. And I know as things that progress through the tournament, right, the scores stop being, for the most part, 62s and 63s. I know you had one ridiculous score yesterday by Tommy Fleetwood at 63, but it wasn't like the first day of the tournament where you had Xander Schauffele and then also Ricky Fowler shooting a 62 and all the history there. But you look at Wyndham Clark, he shot a 70. Rory McIlroy shot a 70. Scotty Scheffler shot a 70. Rory, for me, is the most disappointing because I really did think that if it wasn't going to be Scotty after the first two rounds of the tournament, that it would have been Rory McIlroy. And this is not to be disrespectful to Wyndham Clark or Ricky Fowler, but when you saw what the leaderboard was, and anything could happen in golf, I really did think Rory McIlroy is going to be find a way. And why this one's so disappointing is, once again, Hickey, you know, he opens things up with for the final day of the tournament with the birdie, then played par the rest of the day outside of hole 14 where he had a bogey. If he just gets one birdie, one. he gets a 10-under, and we're probably going to a playoff because that's what Wyndham Clark ended up doing. I know it may change the strategy there for Wyndham Clark towards the end. He had a great punt on 18 to make sure that you were lining up for that par putt, which was an easy tap-in. But, yeah, there's no doubt about it. I was most disappointed in Rory.
But that's the thing with Rory. It's like, you know, we're talking about, it's like he's not come close in this 9-year gap or this 9-year drought that he's had with a major victory.
Yeah,
he's
had some ups and downs.
10 top 5 finishes. Mm-hmm. So he's knocking on the door almost as many times as he's not. And it's just always something, one thing or another, he can't, you know, ever overcome and get over the hump. It's been, for someone who's climbed the mountain now 4 times, it is confounding in a way that he's been able to do it so early on and now just can't get even one break with all these chances he's had.
And we've seen that before in golf. You look at a guy like Brooks Koepka that won a bunch and then injuries and right there mentally as well. If you go back and you watch Full Swing, Jordan Spieth as well. But for a guy like Rory, where you know how great he is, to not have a major since 2014, it's almost surreal. I was disappointed with Scheffler. It's tough to rip Scheffler because he already won a major championship this year. But you go back and you look at Scottie Scheffler, it's almost stunning. And you asked me this question the other day. Is Brooks Koepka the most feared player on tour? Scottie Scheffler, as great as he is, he's just not polarizing. Like, Brooks could be polarizing, so I associate that with fear. But he is the most consistent player on the tour. And you look back at a guy like at Scottie Scheffler, it's almost shocking when he doesn't win. And you look at the other day, to see him go out there and shoot par in the final day, it was like, huh, you would have thought that he would have done a whole lot better than that. I'll tell you too, you know also I was surprised about? Not that he didn't win because I didn't expect him to win, but when you get the first 2 days of Ricky Fowler, 62 and a 68, and then day three or round three, you get to a 70, which was par. For Ricky to be 5 over on the final day, it's weird because no one would have ever predicted Ricky Fowler would have won this tournament. And there's been so many ups and downs with Ricky Fowler, Hickey. But to see him just blow up on that final day and go 5 over, in a way, he was so impressive early, where it's like it's tough to say you were disappointed in him because no one thought he would be there. But there was disappointment when you're looking for your first major and everyone's kind of forgotten about you. Or you've been known as a guy, right, that used to be the guy that you thought was going to get there. And then the last year has been like, all right, just look at his pants pretty much when he plays. But when you right there for the taking and this was right in front of you to shoot 5 over on the final day of the tournament, that was tough to swallow and tough to watch.
It was frustrating, and it kind of took the wind out of the sails early on where it felt like just Wyndham Clark and everyone else. Like, it was really Wyndham versus Rory, but you was really hoping to see kind of Ricky pull it out. I think a lot of people were rooting for Ricky yesterday, too, with how many times he's come close and he's fallen off, and now all of a sudden he's coming back. It is frustrating, and also, unfortunately, shows you how truly hard golf is and how quickly it can humble you. Even you go from a course record and a U.S. Open record on Thursday, and then you have that final round as you did.
And the other thing, too, when you look back at this tournament, and then you get to Wyndham Clark, with what happened on 15 and 16, I thought we were starting to see him unfold and the moment get too big for him. Now, he knew what was in front of him, and he knew what the task was at hand. But, Hickey, when you were watching that unfold yesterday, and you see him go back to back, bogey, bogey on 15, 16. I was convinced, bare minimum, we were getting a playoff with Wyndham Clark and Rory McIlroy. I thought for sure, and I love the West Coast golf right at the LA Country Club, even though there was no energy in that place and the crowd was terrible until the end where everyone starts like running. And that was the first time you really saw some life in the crowd. But you go back and you look at the way that he was able to bounce back and just par 17, 18. That was really impressive because I thought he was on the verge of crumbling.
Big time stones. Big time stones to look at with all the pressure on you. And again, with Rory chasing you, big names on the leaderboard, to hold that for your first major is very impressive.
Let's go to Peter in Washington. He wants to chime in on Maggie and Perloff destroying this Carson Wentz poster that I wasn't a big fan of. Peter, what's happening?
Jack, I missed hearing what you did with your little corner piece they saved for you. And I do also wish Rory handled 14 better. I was like, come on, guy.
Wait, what do you mean? They saved a piece of the Wentz poster for me?
They said that they saved you guys, you and Hickey, like a little corner that you got to destroy. That didn't happen?
Oh, Hickey is... Thank you so much, Peter. There is actually a piece of the Carson Wentz poster still around, so I did not know that.
Oh, yeah, I thought that I actually thought I missed hearing how you got to destroy your portion of it, and I was like, man, I better just call in and find out. I probably missed it, and maybe he'll tell a good tale.
Well, Peter, stay tuned. Stay tuned.
You didn't get to do it yet.
No, I did not get to do it yet because I didn't even know they saved me a piece of the poster. Did you know that, Hickey?
Yes and no. Maggie said it in passing. I guess it had to be Thursday.
Yeah. Well, I was home on Thursday because I had to go to the Bob's Bar show on Friday. Yes. They were originally going to have me help destruct the poster on Friday. I told them I wasn't going to be here. I didn't tell them I wasn't going to be here on Thursday. I didn't think they were going to move it for me. And the next thing you know, they accommodated me and moved it to Thursday, but I wasn't here anyway because I had to get up at like 4:30 in the morning on Friday.
So Maggie did say in passing, they left a little piece. Now it's like hiding in the corner of the studio. Mm-hmm. It is, I mean, probably about 1 foot by 3 foot. You get the left arm of Carson Wentz here. It's still standing.
Best his body's looking a while.
That's true. And there you go. You can do with it what you will.
Gotcha. I will also say this, not that I'm Mr. Macho Man, but I think they could have used the muscle on Thursday, because I did see a little video they put out. It looked like they were struggling ripping up that Wentz poster, but eventually they got the job done, Hickey.
Teflon Carson, tougher in the poster than he is in real life.
Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. Take a break, come on back. John Fanta, the legendary John Fanta next.